Since I've not been with you before on an Easter Sunday, I thought it might be well for me to clear a little ground here at the beginning by saying something about what Easter is not for me. Because I know that for many religious liberals, and particularly for those who have been raised with an Orthodox, evangelical, or fundamentalist Christian heritage, there's often a rather large literalistic boulder that blocks the way to Easter, diminishing its joy and triumph, if not completely obstructing that joy and triumph. So I want to begin by saying that to me, Easter has absolutely nothing to do with the literal physical resurrection of the body, not that of Jesus of Nazareth or anyone else. This doctrine of the literal physical resurrection, taken at face value and in all its concreteness, must be one of the strangest ideas and doctrines ever conceived by the human mind or promulgated by religious organizations. Even to try to explain what the physical resurrection of the body could possibly mean is a problem, let alone to imagine how it could happen. Do the molecules of the bodies of all previously existing human generations somehow miraculously reconstitute themselves? What is the age of those reconstituted bodies? Is one reconstituted, resurrected to a youthful physique, a middle-aged physique, or an elderly one? The theologian Thomas Aquinas thought that 33 years of age was the optimal age for the resurrected body. And I can't say I disagree with him on that point. But a host of other such questions could be raised, but it's almost embarrassing to do so. It's embarrassing to really try to make this doctrine literal and concrete or to apply any kind of rational thought to it. The doctrine of bodily resurrection, literally understood, simply doesn't fit into any kind of modern cosmology or scientific worldview. The disconnect is immense. Indeed, even certain early church fathers who lived with a very different understanding of the universe than we do recognize that this doctrine of the physical resurrection of the body is absurd at a rational, literal level. There was an early church father, Tertullian by name, for example, who proposed that certain Christian doctrines were true and to be believed because they were absurd, because they flew in the face of all human knowledge, reason, and experience. I believe these things, Tertullian said, because they are absurd. It was a mark and a test of his faith in a completely transcendent power. Now, truly, this world and this universe is an utterly strange place. Stranger than fiction, we say. And it's getting even more strange the more we rationally and scientifically probe it. If I understand what the string theorists, for example, are saying, and it's not an easy task to understand it, but there may be other whole parallel universes existing next to or within our own. Other universes right here between you and me in this sanctuary. And who knows how many between those of you in the Zoom audience there. So some string theorists speak of 11 different dimensions to reality. It's really impossible to imagine. Our world, our universe, is an utterly strange and bizarre place. So say our modern physicists. And thus one might argue, well, given the strangeness and bizarreness of reality, is bodily resurrection really so far-fetched? Might not it be possible? But it seems to me this doctrine of the physical resurrection of the body does not arise out of that kind of strangeness. We're not in the realm of religious mystery here, nor of spiritual paradox, nor even of the wild hypotheses of modern physicists and mathematicians. Rather, we're in the realm of dreaming innocence, of wishful thinking, and of pre-scientific cosmologies. So I would suggest that the doctrine of the physical resurrection of the body arises out of the understandable human desire to maintain our lives, to maintain our self-consciousnesses and the lives and consciousness of those that we love. Simply put, we do not want our love to end, not the love of our own life, not the love of those to whom we are most closely connected, not our love of this earth and the jeweled heavens above. And we will grab at nearly anything to keep that love going. And so to me, the origin of the doctrine, that's the origin of this doctrine of the physical resurrection of the body. It's born out of a love of life and for life. It attempts to put material flesh on an immaterial spirit of love. It attempts to clothe our love in a suit of flesh. And so with my heart, I understand the motivation for such an idea, if with my head, I must be critical of the concrete result. All right, enough on that. So permit me then to leave behind the deconstruction of Easter and to move speedily to its reconstruction. What can Easter mean? What can it be for persons with a modern cosmology, for persons with a contemporary scientific world and life view? Let me mention five possibilities for you this morning, which will be broken up, as I said, by pieces of music. So first of all, Easter is a spring festival. It's a celebration of the rebirth and renewal of nature. That is its root, I think. All of a sudden, surprisingly, amazingly, wondrously, there are shoots out of the barren ground, blossoms and leaves springing forth from seemingly dead branches and twigs. And how I am once again, as I always do each year, enjoying what my father referred to as the long, slow spring of Northwest Washington. That's how my father of blessed memory described it. And I trust that you too are taking in this slowly unfolding spring. The pink and red and purple and white and yellow blossoming trees along the road, along with rhododendron and azalea bushes, which are just now springing into blossom in my yard in Port Townsend. And the flowers, the primrose, the crocuses, the daffodils, and of course the tulips here this month of April with your festival. So each day I check my own yard for signs of growth, and there I am witness to the germinating seeds pushing through the earth. I see buds, blossoms, and leaves where before there was no hint of any life or color, and things coming up in places where I had forgotten that I had planted bulbs in previous years. Now, at the beginning of today's service, there was a slide from a poem. It was an excerpt of a poem by Archibald MacLeish, in which the poet is simply overcome at the fact of new life bursting forth from what appears to be dead or dormant branches and twigs. And the poet is overcome by the suddenness with which that can occur. He exclaims, why it was wonderful. Why, all at once, there were leaves. Leaves at the end of a dry stick. Small, alive leaves out of wood. It was wonderful. You can't imagine. They came by the wood path, and the earth loosened. The earth relaxed. There were flowers out of the earth. Think of it. And oak trees oozing new green at the tips of them, and flowers squeezed out of clay. Soft flowers, limp stalks flowering. Well, he says, it was like a dream. It happened so quickly. All of a sudden, it happened. Let's take our first musical break, and we're going to listen to a hymn. It's titled, Spring Has Now Unwrapped the Flowers, and it is performed, as all of our pieces are this morning, by musicians from our sister congregation in Bremerton. That's the Kitsap Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. They have a trio of dedicated musicians. Mike Menifee is the music director. His daughter, Alina Hemingway, is the primary vocalist. And Brian Kenny is the very talented pianist. Spring Has Unwrapped the Flowers. George, could we have that, please? So Mike Menifee, the music director, is also the one that puts those videos together. So, and he's very pleased to be able to allow us to use those as well. And if you want to make a substantial financial contribution, you're welcome to do that as well. No. Well, the renewed vegetative growth and vitality that is springing up all around us in plants and flowers and trees is contagious. A few days ago, I saw a little video of cows being let out of the barn after being confined during the winter months. And that was a video that brought me back to my own childhood when I was the age of some of these youngsters here this morning. I lived on a small farm about 40 miles north of here in Linden, Washington, right near the Canadian border. And on that small farm, in some of those years, we kept as many as 10 cows and heifers. But they had to be kept in stanchions in our small barn during those winter months. Now, stanchions, if you don't know, are big iron bars that fit closely around cows' necks so that they can't pull their heads out and get loose and start moving around. So stanchions that would keep these cows in one place, sometimes for months at a time. And if you can imagine, it's not the most pleasant way to spend one's time. I think if cows had human language, they would tell us that they are utterly and completely and absolutely bored out of their minds. And I should say, fortunately, most cows today don't have that. They live in what are called loafing sheds. But anyway, that was not the case when I was a youngster on this small farm growing up. But finally, when the weather would get a little warmer, on the very first day possible, we would open the barn doors and open the stanchions from around the cow's neck, open the barn doors, and out they would go. Now, I have to say, you had to watch it when you were opening their stanchions, because when the cows realized that they were about to be free at last, they would pull and jerk at their stanchions, almost breaking them. And if you weren't careful, you could get your fingers caught in those stanchions and get badly hurt. But when the cows got outside, what a time they had. Even the older cows would run and jump and kick up their heels. They'd swish their tails. They'd buck and each other in play. And I can tell you, it was a very great day indeed for our cows. Other creatures like our cows may not have a spoken word for joy like we do. But when I think of joy and what that is, the memory of our cows leaping and jumping and frolicking in the fields after a long winter's stay in the barn, that's the image, an image that comes back to me. And for myself, when I was a youngster at that time, I was passionately involved in sports of various kinds. And I can also remember the enthusiastic and joyful transition from basketball, which had to be played in the haymow of a barn or in a gymnasium, transitioning to baseball, which was played out on the open fields. I can well remember that. Says poet Dylan Thomas, The force that through the green fuse drives the flower drives my green age. And one of my favorite hymns in our hymnal, it's in the supplemental hymnal, Singing the Journey, is titled Rising Green. I think it's my favorite one in there, written and composed by Carol McDade. One of the verses goes, my blood doth rise in the roots of yon oak. Her sap doth run in my veins. Boundless my soul like the open sky where the stars forever have lain. So secondly, at Easter, which, as I say, is at base, I think, a spring festival, we recognize and we celebrate new physical vitality. And like nature about us, whether it's vegetative or animal, it's time for us, too, to get up and get going. The body calls to you. Get out of the house. Attend to your body. Go outside. Get some exercise. Take a hike. Do some spring cleaning, plant your garden. Yesterday afternoon, I hadn't intended this, but I went outside and I spent 2 hours just weeding in my garden and planting. So I had no intention of doing so, but there I was. Well, then thirdly, and now we're going to move from the body to the mind, Easter for us humans, with our powers of self-consciousness and self-reflection, can also be a celebration of the mystical awareness that we are all part of one creative power. The wonder of spring may awaken in us the wonder at the fact of being itself, that there's anything here at all, when it didn't seem anything necessarily had to be. I opened the service with these words from E.E. Cummings, a part of it which said, how should tasting, touching, hearing, seeing, breathing any, lifted from the know of all nothing, human merely being, doubt unimaginable you, doubt the mystery. Now the ears of my ears awake, and now the eyes of my eyes are open. So Easter, for me, is also a celebration of our awareness of the irrepressible life force that is our life. It bubbles up within us from we know not where, this eternal, unoriginated, infinite, forward-pushing, creative urge, which is beyond all names and naming. In our individual lives, we are both incarnations and manifestations of this unnameable and limitless creativity. And remarkably, we are also conscious witnesses to that creativity. There's a scientist and a poet, Quentin Wald, 101 years old now. He is a member of the congregation I served in Port Townsend, and he has a little poem that expresses his astonishment at what he calls this miracle, as he puts it, his astonishment both at the fact that there is any being at all, and then also the fact of being aware of that. He says, why should there be anything and this little light to know it? Strange that there should be this awareness, holding little models of bits of the perceived world strung on the uncertain thread of memory. Understanding, he says, is not to be hoped for. There is only astonishment. So let's take a second musical break, and we're going to listen to a piece titled Mystery of Life, again performed by our musicians from the Kitsap Unitarian Fellowship. George? Well, fourthly, Easter has to do with the recognition and celebration of spiritual and psychological renewal. And so now here we're going to move from nature about us to nature within us, what you might call the life of the Spirit. In the Christian liturgical calendar, Easter Sunday, is the culminating and concluding day of Lent. And that's the 40-day period of personal introspection and reflection that is aimed at spiritual renewal, which began on Ash Wednesday this year. That was March the 1st, and which ends today, this Easter Sunday. Lent comes from an old English word, lengthen, which means springtime. And so the interior spiritual renewal of Lent is linked to the outward physical renewal that is taking place in nature about us at this time of the year. This fourth celebration of Easter has been the most important for me in terms of my role as a minister. I'm going to be condensing a lot of stuff here in a short order, but at about the age of 30, I started approaching Easter in a non-literal, symbolic, metaphorical, and psychological ways, and I have continued to nuance those understandings as each Easter comes upon us. And somewhere along the line in the last 45 years or so, I picked up the idea that I couldn't speak independently of Easter without also bringing in Good Friday. Originally, that was God's Friday was the name. So in my mind, and sometimes in my writing, I started hyphenating them or putting a slash mark between them so that it was Good Friday hyphen Easter or Good Friday slash Easter. What I'm saying is two aspects of one larger process. And I came also to the notion that the renewal of Easter, I was speaking psychologically, the renewal of Easter occurs precisely at the point where one surrenders the old life, which is symbolized in the image of the cross and in the image of the crucifixion on Good Friday. The process goes something like this. Psychologically, spiritually, we get stuck in life, blocked, frozen, conflicted, stretched out between pairs of opposites. That's horizontal and vertical, double pairs of opposites. That's the symbol of the cross. The Jungian author Robert A. Johnson speaks of it that way. I have a little lapel here, the Greek cross. It has equal arms, not it just fell off. But it's the Greek cross, not the Latin cross. And so Robert Johnson makes a big point of that. These are equal arms. The Latin cross, it feels, is way out of balance. So that is a symbol of being. Oh, and he says, Robert Johnson says, and the human is placed right at the center of where those arms come together. That's what he says. So then how do we move forward? How do we renew? How do we survive that being at the center? Well, Johnson's idea is that we have to hold on. We have to hold the tension. We have to endure the tension. We have to embrace the opposites. He has a little formula. Conflict to paradox to revelation. That, he says, is the divine progression. By embracing the opposites, he says, and not jumping out of it, but by enduring, by staying with the process, we earn the right to unity. We earn the right to new life and vitality. It's not something that we create, but by that our job is to hang in there and not split. And so the essence of renewal has to do with embracing the reality of what is, whatever it is, however, whether difficult and distasteful, or maybe particularly when difficult and distasteful, but not to turn our face from what is, but to open to it, to hold attention. And so paradoxically, resurrection occurs at the place of crucifixion, and by enduring crucifixion, as it were, and not thinking that we can get out of it by our own devices, by our own powers. Further, resurrection, renewal, occurs simultaneously with this embrace and acceptance of reality. Resurrection, renewal is the acceptance of reality, because when we accept reality and don't fight it, don't resist it, then the power of life surges forth within us. The sluice gates, as it were, open. Living water now can flow in. So no matter how the earth rattles and things unravel, the power of life and being is greater than the power of death and loss. And we are part of that greater power, and we can connect to it. So to my mind, Easter is the realization, it's the experience of a larger life that incorporates, embraces, and encompasses our conflict and our confusion, and also the horror and heartbreak of existence. And again, it comes precisely at the point when one releases and surrenders one's old life. Because as long as you cling to the old life and what has been, or so long as you insist that life must be as it once was, or as you have always demanded it should be, if you insist on that, Easter will not appear. Easter comes out of the grave. It comes out of the sacrifice, death, and burial of the old life. Easter is precisely not the old life. It is new life. It is what is unexpected, unplanned, unanticipated, unforeseen. So Easter is the life that comes to you as a surprise. Easter is finding life in places where you hadn't seen it before and where you couldn't imagine that it might exist. And finally, Easter is finding life in places where it has always existed before, but that you had forgotten about it, and now you are surprised to find it here again. All right, one more. Fifthly, finally, Easter is a celebration of the understanding and experience that love does not end with the physical death of the body. Now, this was the discovery of Jesus' followers when they were in the depths of their despair, namely, that the life of his spirit, the message of his teaching, and the essence and quality of his presence and person did not utterly disappear with the physical death of his body. And so the Easter story is a story and can be a model for us of spiritual triumph that is available to all of us at the passing of our loved ones. Easter has to do with the triumph of love, the ties of love, the strings of spirit that bind us together are stronger and more elastic than even the death and decay of the body. Easter is, or can be, a symbol and a celebration of the fact that physical death does not destroy or eliminate love. Even the empty space that is left by the death of departed loved ones, and that is an emptiness that needs to be recognized and grieved, but even this empty space can be an invitation to fill in the vacuum of that loss in the spirit of the one who has departed. And you can see this happening all the time. I'm thinking of a friend who recently lost her husband, where this is happening with her. After the devastating loss, out of the ashes, new qualities are called forth in those who are left behind. And again, the disciples and followers of Jesus were an example of this. they were able to do things that they didn't know they were capable of doing following his death. So this can mean, can be the meaning of the symbol of the empty tomb. The tomb is empty. The essence of the departed loved one is not to be found there, as it says in the story. He is risen. He is not here. She is risen. She is not here. I'm thinking right now, I received a call 10, 12 years ago now, from the hospital in Bellingham. It says your father has been in an accident and is gravely ill. And I knew enough of these to say, he's gone, isn't he? And they said, yeah. So I came down over the ferry just like I did this morning. I wasn't going to do this. And I came into the hospital, and there was his body. And the words that came to me immediately were, he's not here. That was not him. The spirit was elsewhere. So the spirit of the departed loved ones will now live on in you and in what you create out of that memory. So Easter has to do with the triumph of the spirit, the triumph of love, and the creative renewal out of the void of the grave of the empty tomb. We're going to conclude, I'll conclude my message, and I want to invite you to listen to what to me is a haunting Easter hymn. It's from our hymn book, I think number 266. What's the title? Now the Green Blade Riseth, again by the folks from Bremerton. George? My closing words of benediction are from Dr. Rebecca Parker. They're actually the words of a song that she wrote, put to music with a friend. The words are these. There is a love holding me. There is a love holding all that I love. There is a love holding all. I rest in that love. There is a love holding us. There is a love holding all that we love. There is a love holding all. We rest in that love.